This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Bobe.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Bobe.
Welcome to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. You know, when I hear that intro, it's great. 25 years of experience here on the air in southern New England. Numbers here, as always, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Markets were a bit red today across the board. Nothing to write home about, as they say. President Trump said today he thought it would be easier. good lesson for all of us, including myself. Even if politicians are sincere with their intentions, it's very hard to get things done for everyone and anyone who's trying to change anything. You know, it's a big ship, you know, so it's tough to get things done. Markets are responding negatively. You have to be careful. I mentioned this twice maybe in the last month or so, that there are multiple currents in the ocean. You know, if you're a boater at all like I am, there's a major, if you leave the Narragansett Bay, you'll notice large swells on an average day, you know. Then there are cross currents and smaller wakes and things of that nature. The stock market usually calms down and doesn't do much after April 1st. It's a historical record that October through March is the only time historically when the market gains ground. Long-term average return of 8% or so gets it all in that half. Each quarter tends to be about a half, and the other quarters of the year, believe it or not, if you average them out over, you know, like 25 years, the second and third quarter are zero gain for the stock market. So right now is a good time to not expect your stocks to be any higher than they are right now until the fall, because about 80% of the time, that's how it works. We call it the sweet spot. Imagine that all the gains are gotten in that concentrated area. And the reasoning behind it is it's the go-go period of our calendar year, you know, here in the U.S. The fall is back to school, a lot of money being spent there, tuitions, you know, computers, cars, apartments, holidays, of course, Halloween, Thanksgiving, busiest travel day of the year, I believe, shopping, Christmas, and when that's all over, wham, it's New Year's Eve and time to party and go out and spend some more money. So and before we know it, we have to start preparing taxes. And right around when that mindset kicks in, that's when the markets tend to ease up a bit. People usually have done most of their speculating by then. Year-end pension contributions, you know, a lot of people in the business world who are highly compensated are in sales jobs. You know, if they don't get the job done, they make nothing. But if they hit the numbers, they can make some serious income. And a lot of that will be paid as a bonus at the end of the year. Pension contributions, you know, profit sharing. There's just so much activity in the financial world from October through March. So I believe that if I had to pick the best time of the year to invest, I would say it's the fall. And if I had to pick a best time to take some profits, it would be now. Right around March. So I've always told my clients over the years, if you have a withdrawal coming up, please let me know in such a way that I could liquidate something in the springtime, if you have enough notice. Generally speaking, if you do that, you'll get better prices for the very same securities, historically anyway. In the financial world, there are things that seem to be connected, but, you know, not always. So I guess they're not, right? If they were connected, they would be the same all the time. We work in a field of a world of likelihoods. You know, what's likely to happen? The last time interest rates rose in America was June of 2004 to June of 2006. It was 24 months where our Fed raised the rates consistently, about 17 times, I believe it was. Too much, in my opinion. Too aggressive. And during that period of time, take a look at the world stock markets. U.S. was the laggard during that two-year period. There's a fallacy out there that says stocks can't go up when rates are rising, and that's not true. But the rising rates does seem to stifle the returns somewhat. You know, they're softer, lesser. And good time to have overseas investments. Right now, let's take a quick look. I've been really pounding on this one. Because normally what happens is after the emerging markets have a five-year run, that's when most people will think will want to chime in and buy it. But, you know, I just felt that with rising interest rates here in the U.S., this would be one of those times when overseas investments could outperform the good old U.S. of A. Year-to-date, the S&P 500 has gained about 7% or so, and the emerging markets have gained double that, believe it or not, up about 13, 14, 15, depending on which index you look at. Don't overdo it. I wouldn't exceed 20%. It's a region of the world, so it's a big area, you know. 30 years ago, 75% of all the stocks in the world that you could invest in were American companies. Imagine that. Three-quarters of all the stocks in the whole world were USA. And today, it's just the opposite. 75% of the stocks in the world are not U.S. companies. So I think if there's one probably across the board, possible flaw in anyone's portfolio that's listening right now, is that you probably don't have enough international. It'd be my guess. I have as much as 50-50 in the equity side right now. First time in my career of 38 years when I believed in having equal weighting of overseas as U.S. That's pretty rare. Usually it's like 60% U.S. Now, why is that, Stephen? Well, because USA is still considered the most efficient market in the world, and when it's running right, it should produce better returns than any other market, except ones that are really burgeoning, you know, in the very beginning. We've heard the word emerging markets. There are smaller businesses called frontier markets. Frontier, think of a log cabin, you know, in a dusty plain with a donkey outside tied to the rail. Frontier markets, emerging markets, these are very aggressive things. And if you're doing it yourself, limit it to 10%. I limit it to 20 if it's a region of the world. Now, if you have something more finite, I would want to see it be capped at 5 or 10%. Individual stocks, 5%, please, of your portfolio. Don't exceed any one company at 5%. It's a rule in my office. Won't take an account in that way. Had a discussion, a nice new client recently, and had 20% in one stock, and too much. And he said he would have left it at 20 if it was left to him, but he was hiring us, so he felt he should take advantage of the advice he was getting, which I agreed with heartily. Diversification is the only protection that any of us have. If you're very diversified and you're really good at not panicking, that's me. Boy, you know, it's really hard to have losses on investments. It really is. I mean, you really got to almost intentionally try to do it, I think. And it's not just me, because I'm, you know, been professional for all these decades. I have many clients like this. I met today at 10 a.m. with a couple that have been with me 30 years. And not once in 30 years did they ever pressure me to react to down prices and sell out and lose. And, you know, at age 80, they got themselves a couple of million bucks because of it. No bad reactions will get you there. Occasionally, this breaks my heart to hear this. I meet people who tell me that they lost half their 401k plan twice. I think to myself, I was there, I was invested, I didn't lose anything. I got every penny back, and so did everyone that listened. They reacted, and they panicked and sold everything when it was in a downstroke. You know, when they saw it was at half, they felt they had to sell it at half before they lost it all. And what that tells me when someone says that is that you don't understand what you have. In order to lose it all, most 401k plans that are well diversified, of course, footnote, you know, you have to have world collapse, global, around the world collapse to have the value of your 401k plan go to zero. That's just my opinion, what that would take. Now, if you have it all focused in one fund like you shouldn't, well, then it's a higher risk level. But if properly diversified, I always thought that, you know, no one can know exactly the best thing to own any minute, but owning everything sounds right. Everything is a general term. Don't have to be everything. But everything to me, if you're older, means, you know, Europe, international, emerging markets, S&P 500, floating rate bonds, short duration bonds, energy, agriculture. The two things that human beings can't be without, no matter what, is food and energy. So in the worst of times, they can tend to be very good partners along with the other more aggressive equities. Although there have been markets when those funds, which are defensive by nature, almost always didn't react that way, and they dropped with the market. Now, when one particular index reacts in a manner that would tell, you know, a seasoned person like me, that that's not normal. Usually it means the snapback will be very quick because the price change really wasn't relevant to anything in that sector itself. It was more likely what we call washover. If you have one company, let's think of two companies, a Burger King, McDonald's. If Burger King comes out and says, hey, our sales are way off, we think it's because people are eating better and they're not eating out as much of our stuff. Even though McDonald's right next door might have not had a drop in sales, the stock price would probably decline on that news, thinking that, well, if Burger King's feeling it, McDonald's will be next. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Speculation is dangerous at a time like this. We just had the worst quarterly earnings reports for our companies in 3 years. So at some point in the expectation department, things get a little too high. And what happens is, even though the companies are still nicely profitable, they're falling short of, expectations, a goal that was set there by analysts and really all of us together as far as what we expect, going forward. So I would not speculate right now. I would not be putting any money into U.S. stocks thinking you're going to get it out in 3, 4, 5, 6 months with a gain. I'd be very surprised if that happened. Nice time to get dividends the next 6 months. And remember, dividends are proof of profitability. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. This is Steve Bove on a Friday night, wrapping things up for the week. Hey, we're program's on every evening at 5 p.m. For those of you that are new to the program, although we've been around an awful long time, I'm sure you recognize the voices. Although I've got some young ones, if you've noticed. Tuesday night, Donna Grace, Don's daughter, and Wednesday night, my son Nathan, has joined the team here on Money Talk. Let me tell you how long ago we started doing this program. And Don loves this one. Everyone we mentioned it to looked at us and said, what are you, crazy? That's never been done before. And Don looked at me and said, I love it when I hear that from people. Usually means you're onto something. He's a very innovative guy. Obviously, right? Look, this is a very popular thing today in the world to have this. I travel around, on vacation and business, and little fishing trips and things. And I'm an AM radio guy and hear lots of financial shows. But like any other source of information, you have to weed them out. Some have an agenda. Some are more general news. And even our program, we don't have an agenda, but everyone has prejudices, biases. Clearly, you can't see, you don't. And you have to understand that. A certified financial planner professional would be my first recommendation for anyone to seek advice on their money. Are there people in the financial world that don't carry that designation that can do a fine job? Of course there are. Of course there are. But these little standards we try to use, just to try to help you to reduce down the number of pinpoints that might trip you up when you're choosing someone. Hey, how about, my meeting this morning at 10 o'clock, someone who's been a client of someone for 30 years. You would kind of assume it went pretty well, right? Right? It wouldn't be there for 30 in business today, the way people fly around and, short-term everything. If you have people sticking around for 30 years, you did something right, right? Whatever it is. So, asking people in your own family, that's a great one. Who's the most financially savvy folks in your family? Is it an uncle? Is it your aunt who's a business person or a CPA or whatever, And ask them for a recommendation. You can also check it out on the internet today. You can look up a certified financial planner organization here in Rhode Island Certified Financial Planners. And find out who's local. You might want to just choose someone who's geographically close. And I think that's fine as long as they meet other criteria. 10 years experience minimum, I think, is important. I really think 20, but I just can't bear to say it because it's too much. How can anybody wait till 20 years of experience before they have credibility? But under 20 for me, it was really a heavy learning process. Still is, of course, till this day. But 20 years for me was 18 years ago. And that never makes you smarter than anyone. It just means that you've seen a lot of things, So if what we've seen may be able to help you out, you can give us a call anytime, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. right here. Any of the hosts will help you. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Donald Trump, new tax brackets. Let's stop by discussing that the current tax brackets, there are six of them. This is for married, filing jointly, and individuals. And they range from like $18,000 to $75,000. So people that make $19,000 and $74,000, same tax bracket. That's a, you know, that's a big difference in income. $151,000 up to $230,000. You know, so there's six of them. Currently, we're being told the proposal is to go to three of them. So right in the number, we don't have any information yet on where the break points are. That's really crucial. A lot of middle class people are going to save a lot of taxes. A lot of people that are currently in paying 30% will drop down to 20, maybe that kind of thing. And also raising the personal exemption, standard deductions to $24,000 for a couple means you don't pay tax any taxes at all on your first $24,000 of income. Wow, that's a nice break. You know, what if you made, you know, 28 or 30? You only pay on the amount over that. You know, that's by the exemptions. Some of those exemptions are phased out if your income is above certain levels. Keep that in mind if you're one of the fortunate ones. Hey, again, I mentioned the earnings, S&P earnings this quarter were the worst in 3 years. They weren't terrible, but they were the worst in 3 years. Every market goes through cycles. There are, you know, four major markets of the world, the USA, it's just my opinion, USA, Europe, major, you know, Australia, the major developed nations of the world, emerging markets, and then frontier markets. We don't go near that one. That's super risky stuff. There's a few obscure mutual funds out there that you can get involved with that. They're going to have a lot of currency risk because you're dealing with foreign nations and transferring gains and dividends and things back through currencies. So that's a very volatile, very tricky game. I would stay away from that for most people. Yes, so we're going to be hopefully going to three brackets from six. It'll be simpler, right? But they'll be broader than they are now, right? So if we go to three brackets, I think at that point then almost everyone listening to my voice will retire in the same tax bracket that they worked in, the vast majority anyway. And it's probably the case even now. You see, when you have a lot of tight brackets, many years ago, I think there was 20 at one point, or 17, something crazy like that. There's a lot of opportunity there for people to change brackets. But when the brackets are like they are now, there's $70,000, $80,000 gap between the bottom and the top. And if you're in that range, you're in the same bracket, you know. When you cross over a line in taxes to the next bracket, keep in mind that it's not retroactive. People think this is. Only the dollars that are above the level are taxed at the higher level. The first bunch of dollars are taxed at the lower level. And that's why, you know, you hear, well, you look at your income, you look at a table, and they say you're a 25% tax bracket. If you made $100,000 last year and you're a family person with a mortgage and some children, you didn't pay anywhere near $25,000 in income taxes federally on $100,000 of income. You probably paid more like $16,000, $9,000 less. And that's because not all the dollars are taxed due to things like mortgage deductions, personal exemptions, et cetera, et cetera. Hey, this is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. If you've got something bothering you about your personal financial affairs, we'd be happy to help you out. If we don't know the answer, we will fetch it for you. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Hope you're enjoying our Wednesday night history lesson with Nathan. He's doing a great job. I'm very proud of him. He's my oldest child. Not a child anymore, obviously. But tune in to Wednesday night if you can't make it every evening. And I think Tuesday and Wednesday are the best shows because we have the youth now. And so Don and I can take a deep breath here after 35 years, 38 years for me, and let these wonderful young people share their energy and their, boy, their brains work fast, huh? When you get to be 60 years old and you talk to somebody 30, wow, quick. What's important is that it works well and you get the right answers. But if you're getting the right answers and you're getting them quick, that's even better. But be accurate first. Don't worry about speed. But it is very noticeable and very, very. I find it extremely energetic and very happy about that. So tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays for the father and daughter and father and son financial planners. I think the only gig on the radio like that. So sometimes it helps us to relate. Nathan's more comfortable with risk than I am because he's 33. I'm 60. You know, 3 or 4, 5%. I bought municipal bonds a few months ago, tax-free bonds, first time in my life. 3% tax-free for me. I'm almost 60. My tax bracket, that's nice. I like that. You know, but that would have been not nearly enough potential reward for me at 30, you know, and it's proper. And Nathan doesn't have any tax-free bonds, and he's not going to have them until he has a head full of gray hair like me probably. But keep in mind that you need to have your investments, just like your medications, tailored as tightly to your individual needs as possible. One of the best ways to be sure you get the best advice you can is to ask the best questions you can. And don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Ask people how they get paid, how much do they get paid for what they're doing, and what might they expect from you for their cost of what they're doing for you. These are all perfectly reasonable questions to ask, but most people are not comfortable asking that. And that's why if you run into someone who volunteers up front what their fees are, that's a very kind thing to do for someone, not make them be uncomfortable in asking you. Some people are very amiable and very sweet. I know a lot of people like that. They're very smart and good people, but they're very sweet. And they don't want to ask somebody how much they make. You're not asking them how much they make for the year. You ask them how much you make for what you're doing for me. Because if you understand, in my business anyway, and most, if you understand someone's compensation, then you understand their motivation, right? Right, right. If you're working with someone on a fee basis and you pay them, you know, 1% per year, let's say, to manage an account for you, the only way that advisor can make more money from your account is it has to go up in value. It can't happen any other way. And this is why we have a push going on right now, and it's still on. The foot is not off the gas pedal. Just been deferred 2 months to June for commissions being outlawed in America in IRA accounts. I still tell people this in the office. They look at me like I'm from Mars or something. They say, really? Are you kidding me? I say, that's pending right now. If it passes, it'll be against the law. I think it's a good idea. It's, the majority of people in the financial business that work on a commission basis are good people that do the right thing. I just happen to agree that it's not wise to have a system where you have to trust the person you're talking to across the table. And so what we have in our career is we've structured ourselves so that that's not what it's about. Now, yes, you can trust us. We are trustworthy people, as most are. But we have an arrangement that would never allow. There's no way an advisor on a fee account, the only way the advisor could ever earn more is to grow it. You know, so you have to win first. And that's a real nice, healthy way to have it working. There are downsides to it, too. The industry is having trouble figuring out how to handle smaller accounts. Because be honest with you, you know, if you have an IRA rollover and you want to have it with someone like myself, my experience level, you probably don't need to pay me. Matter of fact, I know you don't. You don't need to pay, you know, that senior person at the top of the totem pole with all that experience. The person that needs me is the person who has $1 million and is going to retire, or the person who has money that's not tax sheltered, and you have to have understanding of the tax laws and how to take advantage of those things. So finding a person who's a good match for you is very, very important. You don't want to pay, you know, the Indy 500 mechanic to fix your Volkswagen. That's just not practical. So what's happening is many of the brokerage companies, and you may have heard from yours by now, are creating these very cost-effective. Our company, Commonwealth, has a bunch of beautiful portfolios of Fidelity ETFs, and their expense ratios are so low. And then there's a service fee that goes along with it for servicing the account. And that's intended to provide an annual review of the account, answer questions, adjust the risk level as the client gets a little bit older. But most of these accounts today that are going to be this cost-effective are going to be run by little computers. And I think that's a wonderful way of solving that smaller account problem. It's going to be very difficult to get a custom account, you know, with $25,000 because the cost of it will be prohibitive. It's not in the person's best interest. So we do need more than one. At least we need multiple methods of pricing services in the financial business. And we're working on it. I think it's coming along quite nicely. This is the Money Talk Show with Steve Bove, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. That's a pretty funny thought. When we started this program, it was so long ago that everyone said, what? Well, nobody's ever done that before. That's crazy. Can't do that. What they were worried about, and they were people who cared about us that Don and I consulted with, they were concerned about the show being an infomercial, sort of a staged thing, you know, to push something, an individual agenda, which we don't do. We don't have any particular favorite products. I will tell you by independent thought alone, I'm not an annuity fan. You all know that already. There's enough arguments in favor of some features that annuities have that you could argue that there's a place somewhere in your portfolio for something like that. I you won't convince me, but I don't think it's wrong always, you know. I think it's wrong to have 100% or 50%. I would not exceed, you know, 20-25%. They're illiquid, complicated, and I'm telling you, when you buy them, when you try to take the money out and do things with them, you always find out, oh, you know, that's not what I thought it was. Very confusing. Very confusing to experienced financial people, folks, so be careful. If you buy an annuity, it's not always wrong. It just has a habit of being overused in the world. I think it's an easy sell. There's no front commission. There is a front commission paid to the sales representative, but it doesn't come out of you. It comes out of the insurance company, which ultimately really is you, right? We all know that, right? Okay, glad we got that one straightened out. Hey, I've been talking about emerging markets. They're emerging so far this year, up about twice the U.S. market, and I'm hoping that lasts for a year or two. It's usually what it does. And after that, emerging markets are a bit of a pain, so I don't think I'm going to be holding them for forever unless something changes. But listen to this report that came from one of the major investment firms. It's a forecast of the major countries of the world the next 16 years of the GDP, gross domestic product, of their nation. Now, the average is 2.1, and you really got to be above that to get growth in your stock market. It's going to be very hard for a stock market to grow in value if the country's GDP is 2% or less. So let's take a look at the only countries that currently are reporting that they're going to do that. South Korea, Thailand, you don't want to be there right now, right? And we don't. South Asia, Mexico, Peru, Latin America, common investment category, Brazil, China, Malaysia, Turkey, Colombia, Indonesia, Philippines, and India. India is projecting a 5.5% GDP growth rate. Japan is projecting none the next 16 years, zero. And Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and Spain are all in the 1% range. These are very, very low. You know, these countries are mature countries. They don't grow at those rates anymore. Nathan said several months ago, we were an emerging market once when we were all New England Patriots running around with rifles trying to start a new land, you know. So anyway, take a look at emerging markets if you don't have something in your portfolio already, especially if you got some time to go. I mean, somebody, a healthy person in their 70s could easily have this. You get above 80, maybe a lower dose of it, you know. And again, it depends who you are. I have quite a few clients that are very savvy that are in their 80s. And I never saw them make a wrong decision about the investments in 25 years of working with them. Very calm. Some people take things literally, you know. One time I said to a guy, you're so easy to coach with this stuff. I wish everybody was this easy, you know. He said, well, I read in the prospectus, it said right there, don't invest in any of these things unless you plan to keep them for 20 years. So what am I going to be bugging you about it for in year two? Read the prospectus. I said, well, I wish everybody, because it's true. If you follow what that says, the odds of you doing well with it are extremely high. Nothing's guaranteed, but it's extremely high. So check out some emerging markets. You may have an option in your 401k plan, usually not. And then make sure that you don't buy, you don't confuse an emerging markets income fund with an emerging markets stock fund. The emerging markets have a lot of growth potential there. You know, those developing nations oftentimes are more motivated to incentivize and do things to get these countries can get these businesses going. They got more jobs. You know, they help their whole society. They help the health of their children. So it's all good, you know. And so there'll always be emerging markets, I guess, right? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe some point they'll all emerge. All children eventually grow up, right? I don't know about there be any new emerging markets. Those would be the frontier markets, which will eventually there'll always be a place to start something new somewhere in the world. Just that part of it is shrinking, right? It's a lot smaller than it was 15, 20 years ago, you know, that's for sure. Today I was talking about taxes, and Nathan and I laughed about this one on Wednesday night. We were just talking about, you know, if you do a regular 401k or a traditional IRA, you receive an income tax deduction that year on the principal when it goes into the account. So you get a tax deduction when it goes in. Now, you would understand on a regular account that you have to pay taxes on the gains, right? But because you got the tax deduction going in, you have to pay taxes even on your own principal when it comes back out. So a tax deduction is temporary. Okay? A tax-exempt bond is not. It's permanent. So the question is, Nathan and I were laughing about this one. Hit me later. That's what 401k does. It just defers the pain. You're going to pay the tax. You're not getting out of it. It's not a tax shelter. A tax shelter alleviates tax, makes it go away. That's not what an IRA is. It's a deferral technique only. Same to a 401k. So I don't believe in overfunding them. If you're anywhere near my age in your 50s, go for the match, of course, all the matching you can get in a 401k plan. But I think for most people, and you'd have to look at your own circumstances, if you're going to put money in a 401k plan that's not being matched, I think you can get better investment choices in the private world than you can get in a 401k plan. If they're matching it, that would be wonderful. You're listening to a guy who's never had a match in my life, in my entire career. I've been self-employed advisor since I was 20 years old, independent contractor, so I have to have my own retirement account and all that stuff, you know. But it's wonderful to see these benefits. You have maybe a couple that have jobs. They both have 401k plans, and just the match can be sometimes, you know, I've seen it be $20,000 a year, the match, because they're getting 100% on the first six or something, you know, in their 40s and 50s where they can really save for their retirement. Most people will tell you you have to save almost all of your retirement money from age 50 to 60, because prior to that, it's very difficult. Budget gets wiped out by mortgages, houses, colleges, cars, you know, all the young people stuff, which is fine. Stage of life, you know. But it's really not until age 50 that most of us can save money, so you better save it from 50 to 65. And, you know, you need a couple in Rhode Island with a house paid for. If you're conservative, you need $500,000, just my opinion. If you live a higher life, you need something more than that, maybe. But if you're real down and dirty, simple folk, and like it that way, and I have a lot of those. They're really simple. I'm kind of that way. You know, I don't put a tie on unless I feel I absolutely have to do it, you know, stuff like that. Just try to be calmer and not as tight-tied as I was, 35, 36 years ago. Stock certificates came up this week in the office. Clients in their 80s showing me certificates. If you hold these certificates at home, like in a safe, or in some people put them in a catalog or a book, they might not even be found. You could die or get sick, and they could maybe not even be found. I've seen people buy a house and found stock certificates behind books that were 20, 30 years old. Most of the time, they're worthless. One time, it was worth quite a bit. But stock certificates are old school stuff. It was a nice little thing you could hand somebody as a gift. If you bought them one share of Disney, and you get the share in the mail, you give them the share. They could put it on the wall. You know, it's very nice. I'm not against any of that. But today, with the electronic world, street name is what we call it, and there you can just, if you have any stock certificates, you can just sign the back of it and deposit it at no cost to a brokerage account and hold it there. Now, some may have an account fee once a year, and they may have a cost if you want to buy or sell some of those shares. But imagine if you had 7 or 8 or 9 different stocks and you passed away, and your children get to just look at a statement and everything's under one cloak, you know, one umbrella. Otherwise, if you have 27 stocks, they have to contact 27 companies directly. There's no middle person, you know. So a brokerage account isn't usually that expensive to do, especially if you're not going to trade. If you're 80 years old and you're just going to hold on to them, your cost would be very, 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 very low, and you'd be doing your family the biggest favor in the world by organizing things prior to, all of our ultimate demise, I guess is what you have to say, right? This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. We're talking about unmatched 401k plans a little bit, and when we come back from the break, we're going to close up by talking about Roth. Get all you can. Times they are changing. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. We're here every evening at 5 p.m. Holly Davidson. It's a Barron's, recent Barron's article. It's entitled The End of the Road. And this is a quite a current phenomenon. And what we have a great changes going on in generationals going on in our country right now. For example, I hadn't really thought about it because, again, I'm not much of an individual stock trader. You know, I like funds. But Holly Davidson had been a great stock for quite a long time to own, you know. But nobody believes that the next generation of young people are going to buy motorcycles. Or they're going to be quite a bit less interest in it. Just like there's less interest in bass fishing and things of outdoorsy stuff, you know. I think this generation that's in that position to spend right now is more interested in electronics, travel, you know. Think about how you can travel today around the world at such minimal cost. I went to Guatemala in December for like $500. I couldn't believe it. Quite amazing. So when you have these wonderful choices like travel the world, go to Hawaii, you know, maybe a motorcycle is not so interesting. I don't know. You know, I'm at the other end of the scale here, you know. Anyway, there clearly are trends that happen in every generation. And if you're an individual stock person, you really got to keep an eye on these things because that's one of the ones that can really clobber you. I don't think today I hope I'm wrong, but I would be surprised if they're not having trouble recruiting like Park Rangers and things like that. That generation of young people, I think, want to be more worldly, you know. And like I said, you can travel around the world today. It's a reasonable cost. It's quite amazing. So anyway, if you are a stock trader, be careful. And I think if you have a lot of stock in Holly Davidson, I would not have a lot of it for much longer. That's one of those macro trends that can be very powerful. And it can be wrong. They may morph into another product line, right? Take their skill and surprise everybody. That happens too. I'd say if you have it and it exceeds 5% of your investable assets, it's a good time for a trim, at least. However, be aware. If you have a stock that you've owned for 20 or 30 years, you have a potential situation there called stepped-up basis. I know you're going to, this is another one of those you're going to say, nah, he can't be right. But look it up. I show you where I am. If you bought a stock for $10 30 years ago and now it's worth $50, so you've gained $40. If you sell it right now, you pay tax on the $40, right? Right. If I give that stock to my son Nathan as a gift and he sells it the next day, same tax consequences. He uses my cost basis. When you give someone an asset, you give them the cost basis. What if I decide to hang on to the stock and leave it to Nathan in my will, only after I die? You know what the tax is then? Zero. Your cost basis becomes the market value the day you inherited it. This is, I've had many people, unless they have a tax background, just absolutely find this one impossible to believe. So what that means is if you have a big old tenement house that you bought 48 years ago and you're 90, and it's got a big fat taxable gain, don't sell it now. Keep it in your will, leave it to your family, and the tax will disappear. Stepped up basis. Part of the Trump tax package is to eliminate estate taxes. It's a double tax. Taxes, it's okay to tax money when you earn it, people. I don't believe for 1 minute it should ever be a tax on leaving it to your children after you die or leaving it to anyone after you die. It's taxed along the way. Every dollar you earn, whether it be earned from the job or whether it be earned from investments other than tax-free bonds, everything's taxable. So if it's taxed in the end that way as an estate, I think that's really a bad one. Not a good thing in my opinion. Hey, I mentioned before the break, get all the Roth you can. There are some very credible people. I won't mention his name. He's on the radio a lot too, and he's a great financial advisor. He has a little different view of it. He's concerned that the tax laws will change as we get further and further into enormous debt. And, you know, when I hear this argument, I think, well, you know what? You know, that could happen, I guess. My instincts tell me no, but it could happen. And the Roth will become taxable down the road, even when you didn't get a tax deduction for putting the money in. I find that very hard to believe it would go down quite that way. I could see new leadership saying this Roth thing is a drag. No new contributions. You can't add to them anymore. I can see them pulling the plug that way. But I'd be very, 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 very surprised if the first part of the story were to develop that way. So I would say if you have the opportunity to do any Roth, Absolutely do it. Do it in your 401k plan. Speak to your younger people in your families if they're in their 30s and 40s and encourage them to at least consider putting half of their 401k monies in Roth. It'll make them pay a little more taxes this year, but when they get to be our age and they have a big bag of money tax-free, they'll be thanking you for it very much. This is the Money Talk Show with Steve Bove. Tune in Monday night for Don Sowa right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business.
Working for the public radio. And the beat is around. The sack on their back, moving careful and slow. It's money that matters. You hear what I say? It's money that matters. And the USA.